The government has just issued its response to the Rock Review, the report of the Tenancy Working Group, chaired by Baroness Rock. This group was established in January 2022 by George Eustace, then DEFRA Secretary of State, to consider farm tenants' access to the developing environmental schemes and markets in England. The group made 74 recommendations to DEFRA in October 22 on several topics, including landlord and tenant relationships, the role of agents, legislation and taxation. The government's 95-page response has now been issued, and Jeremy Moody, Secretary and Advisor to the CAAV, has been trawling through the report. He joins me today to set out the key points and what they mean for the tenanted sector and natural capital markets in the coming years. So, Jeremy, what's your initial reaction to the report?
The initial reaction is that this is a very workmanlike, considered approach to the development of government policies in this area. It recognises the diversity of the let sector, the need for flexibility in it, that there is a need for opportunities for tenants to have access to schemes, but that landlords equally have an interest in the reversion of their holdings. It sets out a measured approach to how these policies would be developed, establishes a sounding board for the let sector to move on from TRIG in terms of how these things will be discussed and analysed, and very much embeds this in how policies will be shaped as schemes are evolved and other things develop. So it appears pragmatic, realistic, and a basis on which I think most parties should be able to go forward reasonably happily.
And what are the key themes that it's picked out?
Well, it starts by stressing government policies overall, and we've had these with the agricultural transition, that it wants a sound, productive, economic agriculture, and it wants an agriculture that delivers on the environmental agenda. And what it picks up here is, again, the need to grow and maintain a resilient, productive agriculture. But it now picks out rather a broader array of public policy objectives. So not just a matter of environmental improvement, but looking at mentions of food security, of environment, of climate change, now very much after the papers of last March, and also the levelling up of rural communities. So it's a broader public policy palette that we have here. And then it sees in this the place of the let sector as a means for those without enormous capital or those who don't wish to buy land to be able to make their way into and progress within farming. So that is the overall agenda against which it sets things. And in that, it talks about wanting a diverse and vibrant let sector. And one of the ways in which it illustrates diversity is it's not just following the talk that long-term tenancies are all that are needed. It's picking up the arguments that equally, particularly for those perhaps who are breaking into the let sector, that shorter tenancies have a role as well. And certainly from where I sit, looking at the amount of change we might be facing over the coming years, now that England has left basic payment behind, this flexibility is absolutely essential.
So getting into a bit of detail, what exactly does it mean for tenants' access to environmental schemes?
Well, it starts from a premise that the primary role of a tenant farmer, and it's a phrase used four times, I think, in the paper, the primary role of a tenant farmer is producing food. That is the economic activity for which the land has been let. However, we have very strong and powerful environmental agendas, and they range from those things that can be done while farming right the way through to those things that completely substitute for farming. And the paper talks about a spectrum ranging from how you farm environmentally right the way through to those changes away from agriculture and land use. And so it's testing the balance between these. It's looking at a tenancy as a collaborative arrangement, but as also a commercial arrangement. And so looking for mutual benefit in that and the relationships that will help achieve that. It's saying very much, as we've already seen in scheme design, that SFI, Sustainable Farming Incentive, the lowest, if you like, of the schemes that are being offered, very much a scheme that can be done alongside and while and with farming, is something that it's not asking for landlords' consent to any application or anything. The duration of those agreements are such that it fits with almost all tenancies. They're compatible with farming. But at the other end, where there is an option that would see a change in the use of the land or a change in the value of the land, particularly a permanent change, it's saying that that requires landlord's consent because of the landlord's interest in the landlord's own land. And very much over the last year and more, those kind of principles have been obvious in the way that schemes have been developed. So we have that in SFI, but looking for other things with landscape recovery. And that's just going to be a process that continues as we see much more of what all these schemes will look like over the next 2 or 3 years.
So it's going to make it easier for tenants to access this funding while landlords still retain some sort of control. Do you think it's going to strike the right balance?
I think it does, because if you strike seriously in ways that prejudice the landlord's reversion, you are then discouraging landlords from letting. And that would be much more fundamentally problematic for the tenanted sector. It's opening up the opportunities, it's easing the opportunities for those things that are compatible with being a tenant farmer while retaining the landlord's interest in the capital value, in the use of the land, in the reasons why the landowner holds the land. And that seems to me to be a fair balance.
Okay, so how do you see it playing out in terms of the likely impacts on the length and structure of farm tenancies?
I think at this point, this does not actually touch too much on that. There will be an element to which some of the schemes, perhaps particularly not the environmental schemes or the capital schemes for productivity, will require landlords and tenants to sit down seriously and agree longer tenancies for the major investment in slurry stores or in water reservoirs. Here, where you're looking at SFI schemes, then those are perfectly compatible with the lengths that we ordinarily see. Where landlord and tenant are mutually interested in seeing one of the schemes that has a longer term framework for its agreements, and these are likely to become much more flexible than the 5 or 10 years we've been used to under the CAP, then that will be part of a negotiation that will bear on the length of the tenancy. I think there will be other factors at play which will also influence the lengths of tenancy.
So isn't there a danger here of landlords taking land back in hand in order to enter environmental schemes for themselves?
Well, obviously a lot in the real world depends on how things are costed and what opportunities landlords have to do that. What I would say is that while there has been anecdotal talk about this, nothing shows up in the statistics to suggest that there is any pattern here of that happening. And clearly the measures being put forward here are intended to discourage that. DEFRA does specifically comment in this paper on this, and it would square with what we see from the CAAV surveys. It's looking at 20 years, indeed much longer, of agri-environment schemes, and them offering very limited evidence, if any, that this practice is a routine one that you could see happening generally. It points out specifically that the area of rented land has remained broadly stable over the last 5 years, and the area of land rented for a year or more, so the longer term parts of all of this, is now higher than it was in 2020. So all the talk of a decline in letting, of a loss of let land to land into environmental uses, to date isn't being shown in the statistics. But it does say perfectly properly that the Farm Tenancy Forum will need to monitor and take stock of, but we don't have any evidence of it at present.
And there was some provision for a more collaborative approach in terms of handing over from tenant to landlord. Can you explain a bit more about that?
Well, again, this is one of those areas where DEFRA is saying, let's be pragmatic and take this scheme by scheme and option by option as to how we're to look at this. The ROC review suggested that it would be right to have arrangements that could see agreements transferred, handed on, as you say, to the landlord or to the next tenant. And they've said, well, that's not necessarily always the right way to do it. Some schemes it might be. Other schemes, actually, the incoming tenant or landlord might want to start a new scheme completely afresh to do the things that they want to do. And so what they're saying is this is, again, to be considered on an evolutionary case-by-case basis, not to have a blanket approach. But they are open to having a transfer mechanism where that looks the right thing to do.
You mentioned incoming tenants. Is there anything in the response about supporting new entrants in particular?
Yes, there's a discussion in the paper about new entrants and very much framed around the new entrant support scheme that DEFRA is developing. And so it's looking to pay particular attention to the tenanted sector in the way in which it develops the new entrance scheme. Again, looking at this, I think one of the things that I would suggest is that really the larger question in this is how the market develops. What the CAV's land occupation surveys show is that the more opportunities there are with new lettings, the more of them will go to new entrants. That where land is let to somebody who wasn't the previous tenant, typically every year 20 or 30% of those lettings go to somebody seen as a new entrant. And the ceiling on that is set by the number of opportunities for letting that are created. If we can encourage or assist more tenancies to be created, there will be more opportunities for new entrants as well as more opportunities for change in the sector. So this is one of those areas where I point to the opportunities that come from the marketplace, at least as much as those that come from policy.
Tax is always a really big driver of what happens in the marketplace. I understand there are a number of tax recommendations in the report.
Yes, the report included particular recommendations around agricultural property relief. The headline one that's attracted the most attention was that in order to encourage longer tenancies, full agricultural property relief from inheritance tax be limited only to lettings that have been granted for at least 8 years without a landlord's break clause. It also commented on the desirability of recognising environmental uses within agricultural property relief and made suggestions around a number of tax allowances. These are very much issues for the Treasury. And with the March budget, a consultation paper was issued calling for views on how we tax environmental transactions, assets and credits, and then canvassing those two APR proposals. The first, that APR be extended to cover land that is in serious environmental commitments that take it out of agricultural use. And then the second one, restricting it only to longer let land. We have until June the 9th to respond to that consultation. A lot of talk and discussion are going on about that. My view is that the extension of APR to cover environmental uses would be a positive change that removes tax as a reason for people not taking decisions they might otherwise want to take for fear of losing APR, for fear of exposing themselves and their heirs to a 40% tax on the value of their land. And then they can take those decisions purely for the business and personal reasons that they want. That might be more or less according to whatever they want to do, but they're no longer driven by tax at that point. From where I sit and all the survey work that we do, limiting agricultural property relief to only longer let tenancies, those for 8 years or more, is likely to be profoundly perverse for the agricultural let sector. It does nothing to encourage anybody who is not letting to let. It may encourage just a few more current tenancies to go over the 8 years, but it's far more likely to move many more tenancies and much more land either to very short-term lettings or indeed out of the let sector altogether. And that would point to long-run shrinking the let sector, reducing opportunities for new entrants, seeing more unstable and insecure arrangements that are only more likely to be acceptable to well-established, substantial farmers able to carry and shoulder the individual risks. While I understand the motives for the proposal, it seems to me to be nothing but perverse.
Clearly, we'll keep a close eye on that and no doubt will be the subject of a future podcast if you want to join us for that. Just taking it back to the government's response today, what did they talk about in terms of access to productivity and innovation grant schemes?
Yes, it's noteworthy that this report was given a remit that was very much around environmental schemes. So it doesn't talk very much about the much more general and important issues of the let sector and productivity improvement. The points it picks up are really just around grants, and it seeks to have joint applications by landlord and tenant allowed. And you can see that for some of the large scale grants, that would be really quite useful with the joint finance that's often used for those. It seeks to have county councils and local authorities brought in to play for grants, again, to assist productivity. And the government is expressing itself as open on those points.
I gather there are also plans to scrap the Tenancy Reform Industry Group. What's going to replace that?
Yeah, scrap's possibly a harsh and strong word, as I would see it is moving on from TRIG. Current history of TRIG has been that since 2002, As a DEFRA-sponsored body, it's provided advice and tackled a whole range of issues that have come up, including the measures that were in the Agriculture Act 2020. It took over from a voluntary group that saw tenancy reform done in 1995. What the government is looking at doing is creating something more formal, more structured, representative in a more organised way of the representatives of organisations for farmers, for landowners and for advisors, and use it as a sounding board and clearinghouse to look at trends, to monitor, to consider the issues of the tenanted sector, to receive concerns, debate and express views, and be a point of advice and suggestion to government as it works through the enormous number of proposals and points in this paper and that will then come forward. So it would be seen as putting TRIG onto a more organised plane, reshaping it, and then looking to involve it much more seriously in this programme of work.
Presumably the CAAV will form a central part of that structure and feedback. That's going to keep you busy. So what are your thoughts on the proposal to appoint a tenant farming commissioner?
Well, this came from the ROC report. The government at this point is saying, once it's been considered by the new Farm Tenancy Forum, it would have a call for evidence to see what people think. My view is that the new Farm Tenancy Forum will do almost all the work that could have been done by a tenant farming commissioner, that while there may have been a case for having one in Scotland, and the present commissioner there does his job very admirably and has acted to lower tensions in what has occasionally been a sparky world, there isn't the need for that in England. There isn't that level of work. I struggle to see who is going to be the person you would actually appoint to do it and to have a single person for doing it. The new Farm Tenancy Forum seems to me a much more appropriate clearinghouse to help people move forward in a consensual way rather than creating a post for the whirlpool to go round.
So does this all mean we're facing a raft of new legislation and codes of practice ahead of us?
It means no new legislation on the horizon. The government's legislative agenda is already fully occupied with the Levelling Up Bill, with the Renters Reform Bill now, and much else. We only have now less than 2 years to the general election. I don't see a prospect of there being legislation. Where this works through is in administration, in the co-design of schemes that continues for the various schemes DEFRA is bringing forward. It feeds through in the discussions going on within the Farm Tenancy Forum. It will lead to discussions, as you very much say, about codes of practice. And a key point that the ROC review made, which has been picked up here, is a code of practice for behaviour by tenants, by landlords, and by their advisors and agents. And trying, therefore, to encourage, again, to give support to good behaviour and to encourage people to behave in a collaborative, cooperative way, understanding each other's interests, and then finding points of mutual benefit. Not as a carte blanche for one side or another, just to get what they want and feel that that has been wonderfully collaborative. It is the code of behaviour that people deal with each other properly.
Now, although we've mostly talked about access to environmental schemes, the report also mentioned access to private natural capital markets, and not just in relation to tenant farmers. Can you explain a bit more on this, please?
Yes, it's an interesting part of the report that rehearses where the government has very largely reached in this very early stage of these developing markets. And that's always a point that has to be stressed, is just how early we are in these. If you think of what a market requires, it means that you need to know what people own and how much of it they own, and that they can securely transfer title to it if other people are to spend money on it. And it's shaping those three things are all very important as we come to look at biodiversity, as we come to look at carbon and the other things that people are talking about so cheerfully. And the report says quite clearly, farmers and land managers need confidently and securely to have access to payments in the private sector. This business of how do you frame a market like that? And this is where the government is working on this. It's designing its schemes so that they are compatible with private markets. And it's talked a bit about that and how you could put, for example, SFI together with selling something separately to a private market. It's doing a block of work, both with the British Standards Institute and separately, about how you have assured standards And one of the obvious areas that's requiring more work and was flagged earlier with the net zero papers is around soil carbon. All the science says you can lose a lot more carbon into soil than people may often think, probably more than you can lose into trees. And that is not only good for the climate, it is also good for the environment and good for farming. It gives you better soils in the main. And this is something to be encouraged. But if people are to put themselves out for it, then actually having an agreed basis, like the Woodland Carbon Code, for how you measure this and how it can be audited becomes essential. Because otherwise, we all know broadly what good looks like, but none of us can quite count it. And if you can't count it, then probably the market won't pay you fair value for it. And so this is where, again, we're looking at a standardized approach to carbon auditing. I could guess that this might yet become part of, let's say, an SFI standard in 2024. So this might be something for which the government is actually providing some financial support as it beds this market in and builds confidence in these areas. It's looking then at issues that are particularly there for tenants. And that's something, again, that'll come back to the farm tenancy group as we look at all of this. But as you see, this is all about still trying to shape a new world that is struggling to be born in front of our eyes.
Given that it is so new, and as you mentioned, we desperately need this set of commonly accepted standards so we can have a fair and functioning market. Realistically, how far off are these standards?
Well, they're coming, and the Woodland Carbon Code has attracted a significant level of acceptance. And you know, you are seeing people use that as the benchmark for what they do, even if they don't want to sell. You are seeing it emerge as a basis for transactions. This will be an unfolding, evolving market, and we'll always be conscious of where we're most uncertain at the moment. The bits that we're certain about, we're all forgotten because we take them for granted. So I think some of these things are going to crystallise fairly quickly. We should, from this November, have in England a pretty cast iron basis for dealing in biodiversity net gain, because the metric there has been out, it's been tested, it's been revised. It's based on quantifying habitats and the risks and rewards of putting new habitats in place. That could bed down really quite quickly. We're beginning to see nutrient neutrality markets emerge in particular catchments, and people beginning to put differing values according to whether it's nitrates or phosphates they're trying to deal with, and the balance of supply and demand for development in those areas. That's beginning to come through. So I'm not quite as pessimistic as your question half suggests, but this won't happen overnight.
It all sounds extremely positive, and we can but hope that DEFRA maintains the momentum on all of these important issues. As you mentioned, CAV will be at the forefront of advising officials to ensure that the new guidelines and frameworks are both practical, fair, and workable. And Jeremy, I'm sure, will continue to keep members updated as new developments arise, both through the website and future podcasts with me. Jeremy, thank you very much for joining me today. And there we are. We've reached the end of yet another episode of the CAAB podcast. If you want to keep up to date with all future episodes, or indeed catch up on previous ones, please head to our website, or you can subscribe for free on whatever platform you use. Also, if you have any feedback or ideas for future episodes, please get in touch by emailing us on enquire@caav.org.uk. That's it for today. So until the next time, thank you very much for listening. Bye for now.